Hi, this is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck. And welcome to Recovery Chronicles, a half-hour interview program that celebrates recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. Our very special guest today is Alexis Newton, a young woman who's 24 years old. Her drugs of choice were meth and opiates, and she's been clean and sober for about 10 months, and we're gonna talk about her life and her recovery. And Alexis, thank you for being here. You were immediately excited about being on this program, and why?
I think it's a very awesome thing to be able to share with people who may need this. You never know who it's going to reach out to, and so I just think it's awesome to be able to help out other people in need.
Yeah, thank you. And you're from here. You're from the Bismarck area, and you, I've heard you say that you come from a so-called normal family. And so, tell us a little bit about your growing up years.
I truly believe I did come from a normal family, if there's such thing as a normal family, but my mom, my dad, nobody in my family drinks or even smokes a cigarette. And so I think just growing up, I was involved in everything. I was involved in sports, Girl Scouts, everything my mom could possibly get me in. They were very active in my life. I think I was so used to just having friends. And I know that fifth grade is kind of the turning point to where I changed my friends and I started hanging out with different people. And that was actually the first time that I actually picked up a beer, smoked a cigarette, tried weed, just being in that environment. And it kind of just progressed from there. You just experiment with things. You meet new people. And my family slowly but surely caught on, and they were still close with me and everything, but slowly started getting into trouble. And that kind of created a lot of issues, and kind of started to get into the way of the relationship with my family.
Now, so what age were you when you tried, say, alcohol for the first time, or weed?
11.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yes.
How did you, and were you with older friends, or what happened?
Well, like I said, there's a new girl at school. Mm. And so since I was the social butterfly, I became friends with her, and, her mom was actually in Tompkins Treatment Center in Jamestown, and so wasn't around. And, you know, just all of her neighbors in the trailer park, kind of just older people the same age, kind of just brought it over, and you're curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how did, you know, that first drink, or maybe the second time you tried it, or what happened? How did the alcohol or how did the weed make you feel?
Well, I think it was more of like a hype thing where all of a sudden we're like, oh, that was so awesome. Like, I feel like I have a headache, you know, just all the things that you hear about, all of a sudden, like, you experience that. But one thing I do know is I loved my new freedom. That's what I felt from it. I felt like I could do whatever I wanted to by being able to try those kind of things and hang out with those kind of people.
So you feel that sort of unlocked something within you? I mean,
yes, most definitely.
Yeah. Did it make you less shy, less anxious, or how would you describe it?
It did. I definitely feel like it did make me less shy. I was, even though I was a social butterfly, I always second-guessed myself growing up. I always felt like I was kind of the odd one out. And I do believe a lot of that was in my head, but I think that's the social peer pressure that you have growing up. I'm trying to fit in with everybody, but I do believe that that just made me feel more comfortable in my own skin.
Yeah. So when did you start to get into trouble at school, for example?
As far as school, hanging out with the wrong kids, I slowly started to lose my good friends who were involved in sports and choir and had good grades. I started wanted to have people see me as this rebel, or just have this image of me to be like this crazy, like party girl.
Yeah.
I do remember that a lot. And in school, I started just becoming very rebellious. I was kind of rude to the teachers. I thought that that's the cool way to be, honestly.
Did your grades go down?
My grades went down tremendously. I remember the first time I actually got an F and I cried, but after that, I wasn't scared to fail my grades.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird how that worked.
Yeah. Did it take you a little longer to finish high school? Or did you finish high school?
Yes. No. I'm very grateful that my parents kind of held me to that high standard of, it was never talked about. You finish school. You don't drop out.
Yeah. That was assumed, huh?
Yeah. And so I'm grateful for that now that I look back at it.
But did you get there by the skin of your teeth or?
Yeah. I never did homework or anything like that. I, you know, kind of just scratched by and, you know, tried to do good at the tests, which actually went for a big part of the grade.
Yeah. But for example, during your senior year of high school, what was your drug use like?
Up until that point, I started experimenting with pills, like painkillers. You get them at school and just drinking when you can. It wasn't until I was about 16 when I started trying like harder drugs like meth and opiates. And I lost a friend to suicide actually due to a drug addiction. And I think that took a really hard turn on everybody. And as far as my senior year went, I felt like I was keeping this big secret from everybody because I was always high on meth. I was not paying attention to my teachers. I was drawing, or I just felt like I had this crazy energy, or else I was falling asleep in class, you know, of course, when I didn't have the drugs.
Yeah.
But I started to feel very distant from my friends.
Yeah. How are you using the meth? I mean, you can swallow it, you can snort it, but how did you use it?
Yeah, actually, the first time I, you know, just smoked it, and it wasn't soon before I started getting into IV usage. I was actually dating an older guy at this time. And like my rest of my story, the curiosity kills the cat. And I just seen the way that they reacted towards it, how they felt and how much higher they got and how much they just loved it. And, immediately actually in the beginning, I started shooting up and I looked forward to that. I do remember, like, my boyfriend would tell me that he has a surprise for me. I would drop everything. I would leave school, like, just to speed down there because I knew he had meth and I wanted to get high. I loved it. Yeah. I loved that new feeling.
Yeah. What was the high like? I mean, in those days, I mean, you know, it doesn't continue, but.
Yeah. At first, I just remember going frolfing and I had this crazy energy and this power.
And that's frisbee golf for those, yeah.
Yes, frisbee golf. It was really my favorite thing to do. I just felt like I had so much strength, like I was invincible. My creative side came out. I was able to focus in on one thing and be okay with what I was doing at that given time.
So that's part of the attraction. I mean, and of course, so that's part of the lie, you know, the drug. Mm-hmm. The drug does things for, or seems to do things for you, but then there's a point at which it turns on you, you know, where it's no longer, fun. It's more of a compulsion. And then it ruins you really. Right. I mean,
it does.
So to talk a little bit about the progression, I mean, you know, the old saying, first it turns you on and then it turns on you, you know, so
yes.
when did things really start to get bad?
You know, it wasn't long. I always had a job. I always, you know, went to school, of course, and just did everything that, you know, I was supposed to be doing. I had a friend who actually tried it at the same time as me. You know, we always said we'd try anything once, but she was able to kind of just do it here and there. I noticed that I was physically dependent on it, actually extremely quickly. And using that needle and shooting it up through my veins, there's nothing else like it. And I loved that. And but that also went for more extreme of a come down. And
yeah.
I already have back problems in the first place. And so being that sick and withdrawing from those drugs intensified by 50 times, and I would get high on meth and I needed painkillers to feel better. And then I was sick of being up. So I'd have to have like benzos or Xanax to be able to go down and sleep just to do it all over again. And I think it was only about a year and a half until I started to get into more trouble. And I was already on probation at this time, just from drinking and partying and everything added up. And this was when I was about 18, I actually failed a mouth swab for meth. And that's when the secret came out to my family and people who actually kind of already had an idea. And I remember I was in going to YCC, and of course I was put into treatment before YCC, and I tried to withdraw and I was on the couch. I couldn't have fun. I didn't have that sense of positive or happiness in my life anymore without that drug.
It must have been hard work keeping all this a secret.
Yeah.
Before this cat was let out of the bag.
Most definitely. I still lived at my parents' house, and you know, I was up all night, had my room down in the basement and just hiding, and when my parents would wake up, I'd act like I was sleeping. And you know, I had to be home every night. That was one thing. I wasn't able to go out and spend the nights out every night. I had to be home, and I had an early curfew. And so my thing was, this kind of, if I was going to be drinking or something like that, you know, we'd get out of school, we'd go drink. I had to make sure that I drank enough to be able to feel a little bit of a drunk or a buzz so I could have that with my friends to have fun before I went home. So by the time I went home, I was already like really drunk or in a blackout and just would hide from my parents.
Yeah. So I take it then you didn't eat dinner with the family, for example, or?
No, yeah. It was hard for me to eat. I had to force myself to eat, and I would throw my garbage and the food behind my parents' back.
Well, and you also know the saying, sometimes addicts have to hit bottom. I mean, do you think you hit a bottom, and what was that bottom like? What happened there?
Well, since I was about 16, I've now have been through 9 different treatments.
In several different places or treatment centers?
Inpatient, outpatient, out of town, in town, YCC, in prison.
Yeah.
Every single different place. I truly felt like I hit my rock bottom when I got caught the first time, and everybody knew. I went to YCC, and that wasn't it. I fantasized by being able to get out and have my freedom to those drugs again.
Yeah.
And I didn't share that with anybody. And but that's what I wanted. I wanted to be able to go back out and use, even though I lost everything, you know. And of course, you know, I was homeless. Nobody trusted me. My friends didn't like me anymore. I got into a relationship with a new guy. I was alone besides with him and my drugs. And it wasn't. I don't know. I just loved that. But everything went downhill so quickly. Nobody trusted us. I lost my jobs. I didn't have money. I was homeless. My parents took away my car because I wasn't doing good. I don't know. It was hard because I just didn't have anybody. I felt alone, and you'd think that that would be enough, but it never was, because I loved that drug. I was not going to be able to get by. I couldn't get up for the day without getting high. And that's kind of just feeling the big aloneness feeling was
and
hard.
You say that drug. So really, I think you're talking about meth and I should mention that, you're listening to Recovery Chronicles on KDAC Radio, and our guest today is Alexis Newton. She's only 24 years old. I say only 24 years old because, my goodness, you've been through a lot already. And we're talking about her addiction and recovery. And, of course, the recovery is the good part. 9 different treatments, you say. And and it is not unusual for addicts to have been through multiple treatments. But what do some people say sometimes to you when they learn that you've been through 9 treatments and you're only 24?
They're shocked. I remember being in a treatment when I was 18, and all the older people in there were just like, wow, you have this chance. Like, you're so young. Like, take this chance. You have a life ahead of you. And I didn't take that seriously. I'm like, yeah, I still have a life ahead of me to party. I'm not done with it yet, you know, because people are just turning 21 and you get to drink, you know, you get to go to the bar and do all these new things. And I already had that when I was 16. I already drank. Like, I was able to go to the bar and party, you know, but mine just turned into drugs, which not that many people around me were into I was.
Can you point to a real turning point?
As far as in my recovery?
Yes, yeah, as far as your recovery.
You know, I think going to prison was hard. Okay. I think getting caught in all these charges, I actually have 8 felonies now.
Okay.
And multiple misdemeanors.
What were a couple of the felonies? I mean, so they lock you up in the women's prison.
Yes.
In New England.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of the felonies were just possession of drugs. You know, I got multiple chances in and out of jail, in and out of, I got put on drug court in the halfway houses and I messed up, went back in. It was just a vicious cycle. And eventually my option was only prison. And then the turning point is that my family has always been there for me, but they don't want to see me as the addict. They had to separate me from the addict daughter versus their daughter. And, the turning point was the fact when they wouldn't even message me in prison, and they're the only people that I had in my life anymore. The guy that I was with was nowhere to be found.
Sure.
And that was heart-wrenching, knowing that I was that alone in that kind of place.
Yeah. What was prison like?
It was not fun. I mean, due to my addiction, I forgot how to live. I forgot how to wake up every single morning. I forgot how to socialize. The drugs were doing that for me, and I was so dependent on that. You know, prison, I just realized that that's not a place that I belong. It's really not a place that anyone belongs, but it's just, you just feel so alone and you have time to think, and you don't really want to think about what's going on. But of course you make all these plans for when you get out and how you're going to be better. And because you swear that you're never going to go back. But I felt like the second I walked out that door, even though I went through a treatment while I was in there, I forgot everything I worked so hard for.
So how long were you locked up?
I just did two months in New England. I got a 3 years with 18 suspended sentence. And I did 4 months in Tompkins, the treatment after prison. And then that's when I got out and still was on parole and probation and everything. And
when you got out, you're saying you went back to using?
I did.
Yeah.
I tried to go a few days. I was strong. But I just, like I said, I felt alone in this world. I truly forgot how to live. I didn't have any friends, you know, friends, of course, older friends tried to be there and support me, but they didn't know how.
Yeah.
My family tried to do everything they possibly could. So since I didn't know how to live life again, I went back to what I know best. And that was using drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you've relapsed a couple of times, and I've heard you say that the relapses are important, and tell us why.
Well, since I've been out of prison, I think you know, as you'd think that prison would be enough for people, but the fact that I got out and still went back, knowing that my consequences could be going back to that place, just shows how truly powerful this addiction is. Mm-hmm. And I got almost close to a year. Of doing good. And I believe that there's no possible way. Like, I got this underneath my wings. Like, there's no way I could go back now. And I truly believed that. And I went back. But I didn't change my friends. Mm-hmm. I thought that I could still live a normal life. I didn't want to listen to people because I thought I was different. I had an attitude of indifference. I'm like, those rules don't apply to me as far as like AA and NA when they say, change your friends. You have to, you know, do this and that. I truly thought I could do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And I learned quickly that that's not the case, because everything I worked so hard for, I got my job back, I got my car back, I got my family trust back, I got friends back, I had money and everything, and I lost that within 2 weeks, actually, of my relapse.
Wow.
It was all gone, and I was in debt. And of course, I am not the kind of person to do a little bit. Like, I just go all or nothing. And it showed quickly in my weight. I was back down to skinny. I just looked sick. And I was sick.
Yeah.
And by the grace of God, I was still on probation. And I got caught again, because I don't know, with how quickly that escalated, I don't know if I would have been able to come back from it without being caught.
Yeah, yeah. So how's your relationship with your family today? I should have asked you, do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I do have a younger brother at home.
Okay. All right.
And I have an older brother and sister that live in Canada. You know, my family kind of, they just get sick of me seeing me hurt myself. They, yeah, I was killing myself. One thing that my family is devastating for me to even hear nowadays is that my parents literally thought I was so close to death that they actually went to the funeral home and started setting things up for me. And that's terrifying and sad to think of that that's what my parents went through. You know, after my relapse, you know, they're like I said, they're sick of it and they don't know if they can trust me or not. And even though I felt like I had it all going on, they don't know that. But things have been a huge turnaround with them and I'm so thankful for their support. I really don't believe that I could be where I am today without their help and just knowing that they still care about me.
Are you living with them today?
I am.
Well, good. Obviously, it's a safe place,
Yes, very safe place.
And you're going to college right now.
Yes, I am in school. I'm going for business management. I'm still trying to just follow my dreams of owning my own snowboarding shop one day. And being a college student, you know, you don't really have that much money. So I'm thankful I can live with mom and dad still.
So it sounds like you're into snowboarding. I'll bet that snowboarding is a really good release for you and therapy, you know, one of those... and it's not always a sober activity, is it? But what does snowboarding do for you?
When I'm snowboarding, I feel free. There's nothing like being on top of the mountains or just being by yourself, just being able to ride down and just feeling like nothing else matters at that given moment.
Yeah. Have you snowboarded in other states?
Yes, Montana is definitely my favorite place to go, Big Sky. And it's just, it's beautiful. And that's something that my family skis, and that's something we love to do together.
Good. So, well, that's good. Yeah. You know, and I take it that snowboarding is almost a spiritual activity for you.
Most definitely. Yeah. I used to have a hard time believing in the higher power, like they talk about in AA and NA. So I just went as the mountains, being on the mountains is my higher power. Because there's nothing else like it. I can go up there and I can think and feel free.
Yeah, yeah. Do you actually feel that there's a presence in the mountain?
I do.
I think a lot of people do.
I do. It's just beautiful. Yeah. There's nothing else like it.
I'm reading a book about meditation and they say it's a lot easier often to meditate in the mountains or at the foot of a mountain or on a lake or next to a lake or maybe next to a river. Well, it's actually a book about mindfulness, which is one of those, which is really taught in therapy. And a lot of people are talking about mindfulness these days. But so spirituality is a very important part of your recovery, isn't it?
It is. It's actually huge. I was brought up to believe in God, but I really lost that when I was using. I believed how could there be a God if I'm going through these kind of things?
Right.
I really lost that. But it wasn't until I went to Heartview this past time, after my relapse, and they, you know, brought us to go to church, and I started to listen to people because the fact that I went back out and relapsed, it was like, how does this keep on happening? I don't understand. I really thought that I had it. There's something wrong with inside me and the way I view myself that makes me want to keep on going back to that. And that's one thing that I did learn from the relapse is that I was able to grow this time and actually fix the things that I didn't fix before.
And spirituality was one of those things?
Yes, most definitely. Because step three in the 12 steps is turning your will and your life over to the care of God. And I didn't know how to do that. But I didn't want to tell anybody that, you know, and it wasn't until I actually dug deep to be able to find that relationship with God, which is my higher power. Until I really started realizing that I need to give it over. It's not my plan. It's God's plan. It's my higher power's plan that I'm here right now and trusting that.
You know, we know that a lot of addiction or drug abuse and addiction is one of the problems of youth right now. I mean, you know, people try to deny it, but it is. We also know that there's an opiate or opioid epidemic in America today, and North Dakota is not immune. But do a lot of young people come up to you and ask you for your advice or ask you for help or well, you know, maybe confess to you that they're using and they want to stop? Or does that happen to you?
It does, actually. Currently, I work at Infinite Vapor, the vape shop, and I see a lot of people who have known me. And, you know, they can clearly see that I'm doing good, because when I'm not doing good, you could see it written all over my face and the way that I look. And when people find out about that, I get messages sometimes, and they just want to know how. And that's kind of powerful, because knowing that they're, you know, I'm able to be someone that they can look up to and ask. By no means do I know all the answers, but I do know what's helped and worked for me, which I literally thought at one point in time that there's no way I could ever be clean.
Yeah.
I believed that.
Yeah. What's in the future for you? What are some of your plans and goals?
Well, like I said, I would love to own my own snowboarding shop, but at this point, I remember going into treatment, and the number one thing that I was concerned about was my happiness. Mm-hmm. All I wanted. I don't care about anything else. I don't care about money. I just want happiness. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of an eye opener for me. So at this given moment, you know, I'm still working on the steps with my sponsor, which is extremely important to have. And actually, just trying to work on myself, because I know there's always room for improvement. But as far as the future goes, I want to be able to live a normal life. That normal word again. I don't know if there's such thing. But I just want to be able to be happy with who I am and what I'm doing, no matter what it is. I would love to help people one day. I would actually love to work at a treatment center or somebody, something helping other people out. That's been where I've been.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy every day?
That's a hard question.
Yeah.
Well, the truth is no, but I know that somebody taught me in the AA and NA that I can start my day over at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's kind of huge, because I'm not going to be happy every day, but I know that it will get better.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are, spirituality is one of them, but what would you say are some of the other secrets to your success?
Number one, the change of friends.
Yeah.
My parents have told me that for years. You can't be hanging out with the same people. And like I said, I thought I could. But I've met some really great people along this recovery path. It's just awesome, the people I get to meet. And once I was able to start opening up my mind to meeting those people is when they started coming into my life.
Right.
Rather than keeping that door shut or thinking I'm not good enough for those people. But I do yoga. A lot of people say that working out is huge for them. I'm not really good at working out, but I love yoga. I'm able to actually meditate and find myself. Actually, I got two friends in recovery to do yoga earlier today.
Nice.
And it's fun to be able to do kind of things like that and feel good.
Where do you do yoga in town?
Yoga For You is actually the place. It's just a small little place, and it's just a great place to get away, I guess you could say, and feel good.
Sure. What does it do for you? Is it like prayer?
It honestly is. It's huge meditation. I really never understood meditation until I started doing yoga. Mm-hmm. Actually, yoga, as far as like the deep breathing and just kind of thinking about your entire body and where you're at that given moment is actually what helped me want to quit smoking.
Okay.
And I, like I said, I work at the vape shop in town.
Yeah.
And that's also helped me too, but I just, I hate the way I feel. And I know that that comes from addiction and the weak mind from using opiates and like meth all the time. I'm weak. When I don't feel good, I know I can fix it with a drug. And so nowadays I have to work through that and find new ways. Mm-hmm. And yoga is definitely a way that I can start to feel better.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So you do it with friends, and they say, If you want to work out or lose weight, or, you know, try to do it with friends, you know, and
yes.
and do yoga, et cetera. So what's your advice to, I'm sure a lot of people, or maybe not a lot of people, but some people are listening to this radio program and thinking, well, that's me. And I think I have a problem. And what would be your advice to someone listening as to, you know, how to get help or what to do?
Well, first off, I know that, going to meetings was huge. I didn't believe in that right away, and I didn't want to hear that. But I've learned so much that is something that really helps. But, the judgment of addiction is really hard to face. And But I just know that once I was able to be honest with myself and tell people and confide in people about what's really going on, having someone hold me accountable is huge, whether it be a friend or a parent or anything like that. But I strongly, if anybody's listening to this right now and knowing that that's where you are, you want out, that the number one thing is to be able to find that help and trust in somebody to be able to get you out.
Well, we have to wrap it up. I told you the half hour would go pretty quickly. So, Alexis, thank you so much for being on Recovery Chronicles today.
Yes, thank you.